Good morning. I'm Carol Bonacero, President of the Senior Executives Association, and on behalf of our Board of Directors and staff, I'd like to welcome you to our 26th Annual Career Executive Leadership Conference. This year, we're pleased to once again sponsor the conference in affiliation with Deloitte Consulting Human Capital Practice. We have a very full day, so with no further ado, I'm going to introduce our opening speaker. The bio in your packets will tell you all about Shelley Metzenbaum's career of public service. She's currently Associate Director for Performance and Personnel Management at OMB. And for the record, we know from her experience at EPA that she has a very fine appreciation for the value of the Career Executive Corps. Because her work and her views have a direct impact on the expectations for your performance, I know you're going to pay very careful attention to what she has to say. Shelley Metzenbaum.
Good morning. I'm just delighted to be here with you this morning. When Carol invited me to speak to this group, I was like, oh, yes, what a great opportunity. So thank you very much. I have to admit, I'm here today on a mission. I want to tap your intelligence, your expertise, and your leadership to try and make this performance management approach that we're taking work. And what do I mean by that? Well, we spend a lot of time doing things in government, and we're doing them because we think they're going to accomplish something. And we need to figure out how to actually get that line of sight from those of us in government, the people in government, to the people and places that we're trying to have an effect on. To make sure, we, in the performance management business, you talk about it as outcomes, to really have that line of sight and try and make sure that what we're doing is actually accomplishing something. So what I want to do today is two things. One is to, if you don't already have it, give you an overview. We've laid this out in the Analytic Perspectives of the Budget, Chapter 7. I know it's your favorite reading. So we've laid that out, but I want to sort of elaborate a little bit on how we're approaching performance management in the Obama administration. And then I want to take a lot of time not just to get questions from you, but to really get advice from you. And hopefully, by the end of today, so I'm starting this by telling you what my objective is, hopefully by the end of the morning, I will have enlisted your assistance in bringing about this change. So, let's see. I just hit the wrong thing, so now I can't get there. There we go. So, this is my useful button, as opposed to the easy button, because ain't nothing easy in government, right? It's useful, useful, useful. We have, over the last decade and a half, produced a lot of goals and a lot of measures. And we've put them into a lot of plans and a lot of reports. The question is, are we using them? Are they useful to us in government? Are they useful to people in our field offices? Are they useful to our delivery partners, state and local governments, nonprofit organizations? Are they useful to our suppliers, our contractors, et cetera? Are they useful to Congress? Useful, useful, useful. If they're not useful, if nobody's using them, then we ought to be asking why we're collecting them. So we really need to think about that. So we're trying to move from a system less focused on planning and reporting, and that is not to say planning and reporting are not important, but more to a system that's focused on use. So just to quote the president today, I mean, what are we really trying to accomplish here? We're trying to accomplish a government that works and that works well. And we have a president who, you know, really cares about that issue and really cares about using data, measurement of past experience to figure out if it's working. The question we ask today is not whether our government is too big or too small. So government is the part of the solution. But whether it works, whether it makes a difference on different things that we in government are trying to influence. Again, he talked in another speech. If you go through his speeches, you see these kinds of themes weaved through them. Success should be judged by results. Data is a powerful tool to determine results. We can't ignore the facts. We cannot ignore the data. And then as Jeff Zients, the nation's first chief performance officer, appointed by President Obama, said, the test of a performance management system is whether it's actually used. Federal managers and employees at all levels must use performance goals and measures to set priorities, monitor progress, and diagnose problems. And I'll elaborate that on that in a bit. So Jeff Zients, as chief performance officer, has a large agenda. Performance management, the use of goals and measures to manage with to improve outcomes, is a key part of that. And another key part of that, especially at a time when one of our largest goals as a government is to stabilize and improve the economy, is making sure we have control the budget, that we have have fiscal stability. And so eliminating waste is a huge part of what all of us in government have to do now, because we have areas where we need to spend money, so we need to make sure we're not spending money on things that don't make a lot of sense, like improper payments, like not collecting debt. And then building a state-of-the-art infrastructure so that our technology in the office is as up-to-date as our technology at home, so that we actually close the gap that sort of revolutionized, that's transformed the private sector. It's time to bring that into government. And we know in government that's really hard to do, because we have a lot more protections on the system in terms of, the difficulty of taking certain kinds of risk. But we still need to get a much more sort of agile government. And then creating a culture of performance. Open government is a big part of that. And really working with, a government... the president talks about making government service cool again. That's partly about getting great new people to want to come into government, because as I look around this room, you all look like you're about my age. Not surprising, because you're the senior executive service. But we also know we're going to need a lot of great new people to come into government. But it's also about the fact that those of us who do work in government and are proud to work in government, sometimes... we're not, the image of us is not what we would hope it would be, that there's a whole heck of a lot. What I always love is when new political appointees come into government and go, wow, I can't believe how hard the people here work. Wow, I can't believe the intelligence, and so I've seen that happen with multiple administrations of both political parties. And it's just, there's an assumption that there's not the kind of determination and commitment that I've seen in my experience in working with, people in government. So I think our challenge is to really help get a system where the goals, and so I'm focusing on the performance management system and the personnel. That's my portfolio. And I'm going to talk mostly today about the performance management, but I also want to talk to you a little bit about the personnel or hear from you on it. And I think the challenge is that in government, we're always faced with crises. We're faced with outside pressures that are constantly coming at us that need quick turnaround. And how do we actually get ourselves? How do we get our leaders? How do we as leaders focus on a few things that we know we want to accomplish? That even with all those crises coming in at us, we still want to make a difference. And so it is one of the reasons we asked cabinet members when they came in to identify between 3 and 8 high-priority goals that they could accomplish within 18 to 24 months, so in the near term, without new legislation, without new money. Now, why did we do that? This was not adding something on top of what GPRA says in terms of strategic planning and in terms of annual planning, but this was actually getting a new set of leaders coming in to use the power of a goal to communicate. It's a phenomenal shorthand for saying, what are we trying to accomplish, and what's a real priority to me? That's pretty hard to do, especially when you're new on the job, but it's an incredibly important thing to communicate. So, and not to have dozens and dozens of priorities, all of which you want to get done, because then what do you, as the folks who are as senior executives in charge of execution, right, in charge of implementation, making this happen, how do you know where you really ought to be focusing? And part of this was saying, well, look, we'd like you to communicate to your organization where you want to focus, what you really want to get done as your highest priorities. Even if you don't get that new piece of legislation passed, even if you don't get that additional bit of appropriation, what are you really going to focus on? So we've made a lot of progress in the past. We're not tossing out the gains that have been made in the past in terms of what you have done over the last, since 1993, but some of you before that. I mean, anyone here from, I mean, a lot of you have been collecting data for years, but really understanding the power of a goal to communicate and to focus, and the power of an ambitious goal to stimulate innovation, and the power of a goal that's outcome-focused to get people to work across government. So we've had some progress. We've had increased measurement. GAO's done studies that showed after, you know, GPRA passed, you saw a significant gain in people using goals and measurement and increased attention to outcomes. But then we kind of hit a plateau. We've had problems in the past. What are the problems? Well, a lot of people were just producing plans and producing reports, a lot of agencies, that they would then send into OMB and Congress, but nobody read them. That's a problem. That's a waste of time, right? That eliminate waste, that's a waste of time. So it doesn't make sense to write reports that nobody uses. So the question is, okay, reporting's not a dumb thing. How do we figure out who the audience for those reports are and how we have to tailor the reports so that they find them useful and actually use them for what? Well, one is, and you see this with some of the strategic plans that are now on the street, to have a good, healthy, democratic debate about what our priorities should be. So when you put a strategic plan together, you are announcing to the country, to the workforce, to Congress, what you think the priorities should be. And it's not often not, I mean, it's not bad that there's controversy around it. If there were no controversy, my guess is you would have done exactly what's been done in the past and nobody would have paid attention. But it's actually a way of engaging the public in a conversation. So that's one way we use these things. But another way is to actually say, okay, let's use the data diagnostically to figure out what's working so we can do more of it and what's not working so we can do less of it. Let's understand why it's working so we can promote those levers of change and why it's not working so we can prevent those levers. So we've saw in the past that there was, you know, just sort of an almost a compliance approach to the Government Performance and Results Act, to the PART. In a few cases, you had some really great changes. So that's, we're trying not to disrupt those. But we also know that in a lot of cases, it was just a lot of make work that people were doing, and we don't want that to continue. At the same time, we've been scanning, and when I say we, I mean a lot of people, we've been looking around the country and around the world to say, what else is working so we can copy it? Can we adapt it? So it doesn't have to be invented here if it works. We should improve on it. And what's worked? Well, New York City. Any of you know about CompStat? How many of you know about CompStat? New York City's police department? So I strongly urge the rest of you, if you've not heard about CompStat, to learn about New York City Police Department CompStat, where Bill Bratton, as police commissioner in New York, came in and said, we want the crime rate to go down 40% in 3 years. Now, you can imagine if you're a policeman there, or if you're the mayor, because Giuliani said, don't make that public. Bratton decided to make it public. You can imagine your reaction to that, which is, there is no way we're going to bring the crime rate down 40% in 3 years. That's just not realistic. But Bratton felt that when he looked at the situation and knew his past experience in Boston as a lieutenant in a local precinct, then running some transit authority systems where they stopped people jumping the turnstiles and they started to see real gain, he thought we can make a difference if we make it clear, we identify who the senior accountable official is for this in each place. So he made precinct captains put them in charge of bringing the crime rate down in their precincts. Before they had matrix management, nobody knew who was responsible for what. And so they really tried to bring about that change. And he basically said, okay, now we're going to have regular meetings every month. And he just would have each precinct in on a regular basis. The whole borough would come in, all the precinct commanders, you'd have the detectives, you'd have the general counsel, the head of the detective unit, the head of the general counsel, the budget, et cetera. In the room, the precinct captain would stand up here, and the precinct captain would have to talk about what the crime patterns look like in the precinct and whether they were going down or they were going up. And the precinct captain would have to be able to explain, well, there's a pattern of crimes right here. Here's what we're going to try. The beauty of these meetings, which were called CompStat meetings for computerized statistics, some of you may be familiar with Vivek's TechStat, which borrows on, I think, D.C., they call it CapStat, which all of this, you know, Baltimore, they had their own stat meetings. This is an evolving learning where we're experimenting with different ways to really drive change. And the precinct captains would come up, and they would talk about what they were trying to do in the precinct, but they weren't on their own. They would be able to learn from each other's experience and from the central office actually looking across experience to say, this worked here. Why don't you try that there? Or, look, there's an interesting new theory. Let's try this. The broken windows theory was one, which is small crimes lead to big crimes. So they pushed at that systematically so that the crime rate went down 25% in 2 years. It continued to go down. It's down about 80% now. Now, here's the interesting thing. You might say, well, how do we know Bill Bratton was, you know, what Bratton did, the CompStat sessions, this goal-focused, data-driven discussions to constantly say, where are the problems? Why are they occurring? What can we do in government to try and move the needle on that, to bring the crime rate down? What can we do? And Bill Bratton did that, and the crime rate came down. And not surprisingly, some academics did a study. One of them got popularized in a book called Freakonomics, and you may know it. And somebody claimed, well, and it's a very reputable academic, that the abortion rate was actually the real reason that the crime rate went down. So this is evaluation as a partnering with performance measurement. And it's very possible that the abortion rate explained it, except when you looked at the study, it was only for a 10-year period, so there were some methodological problems with that particular study. So other people are studying it. I'm surprised at how little they're studying it. But then, lo and behold, Bill Bratton got appointed to go to Los Angeles. And he did what I will call a replication demonstration. He did it again. Not only that, we've seen CompStat adopted in a number of different cities where the crime rate's been brought down a lot. Now, CompStat's just a name, so in some cities that adopt CompStat where they really don't use the data diagnostically to sort of say where are the patterns, they use maps to map things and see where you see clusters, where they look at, you know, just sort of, okay, why is the crime going up in this area and not in that area? They use the data to trigger focused follow-up questions, which is what we're hoping you will do in each of your operations. They used it, and in Los Angeles, they brought the crime rate down dramatically again. Bratton will tell you, and he actually came to the Performance Improvement Council and spoke with the PIOs, the Performance Improvement Officers for every federal agency. And one of the stories he basically said to us is, you know, in Los Angeles, it turned out to be a different kind of crime. There are gangs in Los Angeles that have been there for generations. And so we had to take, in New York, there are gangs, but they're just not the same. We had to take a very different kind of strategy in Los Angeles to deal with the anchored gangs. And they started using RICO laws and things like that, so tapping the federal government's authority, working with federal agents, they really started to move it, and they haven't brought it all the way down, but people saw it, the crime drop in a way it never had before. So it's really learning from experience. I know. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to do an evolving vision that goes from reporting to improvement, that is used where goals and measurement are used as a leadership tool by the heads of the agencies when they're giving speeches, when they're talking, when they're asking questions, by the deputies, by the heads of the different offices, by every one of you, because you are the leaders, where you are actually reinforcing by the questions you ask, by the way you structure meetings, goal-focused, data-driven meetings that ask why, that drill down when you don't know the answers, that do replication demonstrations, that use goals and measures to inform people, to enlist and engage people outside the organization. So there's a great story from years back about the Coast Guard in Coast Guard trying to figure out, say, sort of moving to think about outcomes and saying we want to reduce fatalities on the seas, and realizing the towboat workers had the highest highest fatality rate. And so they've done an analysis, and I got to tell you, doing the analysis turned out to be incredibly hard because they couldn't find the denominator. And they kept having to go look for something that would help them look for a rate. So they knew how many accidents they had on the seas, but they didn't know the rate, and they decided they were going to focus on that. And they finally found a National Academy of Studies report that gave them an estimated denominator that let them say, wow, surprise to us, the towboat industry has the highest fatality rate out there. And so they went to the towboat industry and said, we got a problem. You have a very high fatality rate. And the towboat industry said, we don't think so. So the Coast Guard gave them the study. And they looked at the study and they said, whoo, problem. Didn't know we had that problem. And so they started to work together, the industry and the Coast Guard, to understand why the problem was occurring. And in a lot of cases, it turned out that towboat workers were falling overboard. And so they started to think about strategies and put in place, test different strategies, put them in place. Now, in the old way of dealing with this, they might have sort of spent a number of years to actually do a regulation, which if the towboat industry had not cooperated, and we know there's not always regulatory cooperation, had the towboat industry not cooperated, they might have had to promulgate a regulation about railings and things like that. And for all I know, they've ultimately done that. But they were able to cut the fatality rate in half with the towboat industry. Now, I learned that story about 8 or 10 years ago. What really surprised me when I came back about a year and started talking to the Coast Guard folks again, is they are still having quarterly meetings with the towboat industry. It's no longer one of their high priority goals because they cut the fatality rate in half. Fishing vessels have a much higher fatality rate, so they're working much more closely with the fishing industry. And I was up in Boston before I moved down here to work, and would see stories in the Boston Globe that made me understand how they were working with the fishing industry, where fishermen would say, you know, this guy saved my life, this inspector, because he told me to put, you know, my safety vest up near where I pilot the boat. So it's that kind of thing where we're really using this information not just to improve, but also to engage and to enlist assistance, to cooperate, to inform people so they can make smarter decisions. Schools, where we've got schools, if we don't give the public information about which schools are improving compared to their demographic peers, then we may just be looking at demographic data when we look at school performance data. And if the Australians have now created a website, myschool.edu.au, or I may have some of that turned around, but they've created a website where you can go in and you can look by grade, by subject matter, at demographic peers. Can we do that in each of your operations to the extent we should be able to do it? If we can't slice and dice the data so we can actually see what areas we're seeing trending up, which areas it's trending down, so we can go ask on the ones that are trending up, why is that happening? Then how are we going to find ways to improve? Now, we can experiment a lot. We can do that, and that's a really great way to do it. But why not look at what's out there already and try and learn from experience? For those of you in state and local governments, my friend Paul Posner is here, and he hears me talk about this all the time. Justice Louis Brandeis was often talked about as saying the states are the laboratories of democracy. And I guess what I would ask you is there a scientist in the laboratory? Shouldn't the federal government serve as that scientist or make sure scientists exist to learn from the experience of the states? If you're putting in, for example, stormwater treatment, and learn from the experience of locals. If we're putting in a new rule on stormwater management, where are we seeing local practices which actually improve water quality faster, so that will low-impact development actually have as big an impact as hot plumbing, putting in a new set of sewer pipes? On education, where are we seeing the kids in communities whose parents don't have much education, where are we seeing the greatest improvement? Can we figure out why we're seeing that improvement. So I haven't moved my slides much at all, so now I'll move my slides a little bit. But I wanted to give you the sense of we're trying to go from reporting to improvement, to use these goals and measurement as a leadership tool, as a diagnostic tool, communicating to inform, to enlist and engage, and then analyzing the data, not just putting it on paper. So our three strategies laid out in the budget, using performance information to lead, using those goals to lead, to learn what works and what doesn't so we can improve outcomes. I have a friend who's, you know, been working with me on some of this for a while, and he says, it's lead, learn, and leverage, Shelley. So if you want to say lead, learn, and leverage, that's okay with me. Communicate performance information to improve results and transparency, and strengthen problem-solving networks. We do very little in any single government office, any single person. There's not a one of you who's really likely to be able to change and improve an outcome on your own. You got to work with the people in your office. You got to work across offices. You got to work beyond government. We need to strengthen problem-solving networks so they can, whether the problem is something like climate change, the problem is something like water quality or kids' education or children's health. We need to work with people outside government. The First Lady's Obesity Task Force, inside government, outside government. It's, you know, we're goal-focused, data-driven. How do we learn? Work with these networks, but also networks where we can learn across each other. So how do you actually manage a regulatory program well? How do you measure it? How do you run state and local government programs where you're dependent on states and locals to accomplish your objectives? Wow, that's three levels of, you know, relationships. How can we actually manage those programs well? So we need problem-solving networks across government to help each other, to help us learn from each other's experience. So just very quickly, that's the old framework. You had the Government Performance and Results Act at the agency level and maybe at the program level, but then you also had these part things, and the two didn't meet. I didn't even put a wheel up there for the budget process. We're trying to integrate this so that leaders set priorities, starting at the cabinet level, but all the way across the organization, in the bureau, in the office, aligning up, aligning across. Measurement and analysis. You got to measure to know if you're making a difference. Yes, it's very different for an R&D program than it is for an accident program, where you have a lot of incidents. It's very different for a drug detection program where it's hard to see what you're trying to measure. We need to be smarter about that. We need to build those networks to help each other understand how do you manage and measure in programs where it's hard to detect. We need those goal-focused, data-rich discussions, not just to talk, but to inform action. And action that changes, that adjusts based on the new evidence that's coming in. At meetings where you can really push each other to say, well, I know what you're assuming there, but is that really a fair assumption? Where we feel, and you as the leaders in the organization, I hope you're going to figure out how do we run this, these kinds of meetings. Go visit the DC CAP sessions. They're open. They're happy to have you. And transparency, getting that information out across government. So we've set up these high priority, we asked agency leaders to identify their high priority goals. The next thing we did, and those are all listed for the first time in the president's budget, these near-term goals. You also have your strategic longer-term planning goals. But these are all listed, these priority goals, in the budget. And the next thing we asked was for every agency to identify who the goal leaders will be and who they are. And they have done that, and we've met with all of them on their action plans. What are their action plans? Here's where we are now. Here's where we want to be. Here's the trajectory we think we should follow. Does it look like this or this? Really think about it. We don't want you just to say, oh, we want to be there. We want you to think about, how am I going to get from here to here? And how am I going to know along the way if I'm on or off track? So we're also asking everybody to do quarterly updates on the high priority goals, which we hope and assume will be a model for the way we run all of government. You know, but on you've got to have priorities, quarterly updates, so that that go into a public website that explain if I'm on or off track, why I'm on or off track, that show me the trajectory for change. These data-driven performance reviews, both within the agencies and OMB, will be looking at this quarterly data, to say, okay, where do we need to step in? Either because we can be helpful, and actually what we want to do is take a success in one place and spread it elsewhere. Notice I try not to have focus only on problems, and I think you do too. You wouldn't be sitting here if you were only focused on problems, right? You actually care about making these successes and spreading these successes. That's my assumption, at least. Anyway, so really searching for successes we want to spread, but then looking for problems that need attention. And also, and we're getting this a lot from a lot of agencies and their priority goals, is where do you possibly need OMB help to deal with cross-agency goals, whether it's weatherization, which is HUD and energy, or it's homeless veterans, which is HUD and the VA, whether it is STEM research, where we have at least three agencies, and we think more like 30 agencies working on it. So it's really we're putting in place a process where we start moving on these issues. But again, we can't do them all. We will set priorities. So there will be some things where we say, okay, OMB's not going to get engaged, but we hope the agency is moving forward on this. These are their high priority goals. And then updating a public portal on a regular basis. So I just share this with you. I talked to you about the trajectories. This is a projected trajectory of, you know, and see those little lines on the bottom. Here's your strategy. We don't have this capacity on our website yet, but I wanted to share with you in New York City where they tried to bring the smoking rate down, and I see friends here from CDC where they're trying to do this, so we're all watching CDC because we're hoping they bring this to the federal government. You'll see where this is a three-year moving average on the smoking rate. I'm sorry, alcohol and drug dependence. And No, this is smoking rates here. So the percent of adults who smoke was 16.9% in calendar 2007, compared to 17.5% in 2006 and 21.5% in calendar 2002. Notice those arrows. Next to that, it says city and state tax increases, smoke-free workplace, from free patch program begins and media campaign begins. So is there a line of causality that you can prove with this graph? No. Would you need to actually have evaluations or see if you can do replication demonstrations elsewhere? Yes. But when you look at this, does it give you somewhat of a story about the likely impact of government action? Yes. And so this is the kind of thing we hope we'll be working on with you. So I've been talking a little bit here about sort of how measurement and evaluation, because as you know, OMB has been pushing evaluation along with performance measurement. These two things are not separate. They're complementary. One feeds the other. If we have good performance measurement systems, we end up having good outcomes data that then academics can do good regression analyses on to try and help us figure out the variables that make the difference. But also, if you set up your measurement system in a way that allows you to look at trends in different places, so in different regional offices or below a regional office level, so you can scan for successes, you can scan for sort of anomalies, you can look for, and I don't know if any of you have ever read the book Better by Atul Gawande that talks about sort of looking for anomalies, right? Sort of positive deviance, he calls them. I love the term. Because sometimes they may be a statistical aberration, but other times they may actually be a change in practice that you want to know about. So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has done this for years, and one year saw that the fatality rate dropped precipitously in California. And so they said, wow, look at that. It's not happening elsewhere. What do we do with that? How do we deal with that? And so one approach is, well, let's go commission a study. But they actually said, before we do that, let's pick up the phone and call California and ask them what they did to change. Not very expensive, pretty smart. Think about how many times you pick up the phone, hopefully a lot, to sort of say, what's going on? But in a data-driven way. And what it turned out was California had adopted a primary enforcement law that allowed them to stop and check for seatbelt use. They then watched as other states adopted it, and then they started to promote it. So you see here, search for promising practices. If you don't have them, then actually develop them. Experiment. Those of you from education may recognize that as one part of your I3, your Innovation 3 thing. If you find promising practices, then replicate them, validate them. Do replication demonstrations. Once you get a higher level of confidence, then try and promote them. Promote the proven practices. Now, that's not so easy either. Sometimes we need to set up systems, marketing campaign, measurement systems that give us feedback on that. So, oops, I'm missing a box here. Search for pros and proven practices. I'm mixing a box there that sort of says, you know, adoption, increase adoption of proven practices. So when you do that, let's take hand washing. We've known since the 1890s, 1840s, I don't know if anyone knows the date. Hand washing is one of the major ways to reduce infections. And yet the hospitals who've tried to adopt hand washing campaigns have found they're remarkably difficult. We've had innovation in technology. That Purell stuff, right? I think that comes from hospitals with 17 seconds between one room and another room. But getting people to change their practices, that's behavioral change stuff. And a lot of what we do in government requires behavioral change. So learning how to do that promotion of proven practices is easier said than done, and we need to get more sophisticated about that. So let me finish with two other thoughts. One is, we talk about transparency a lot. I've just been describing here a whole bunch of reasons for transparency. One is to strengthen accountability by informing this democratic decision-making. Have we picked the right goals? But it's partly to motivate. We will, on our website, put the goal leader's name on the website with the trends, and to strengthen public trust. But it's also to inform decisions about the schools people pick, about the decisions people in your field offices make, about decisions made by suppliers and delivery partners, to invite ideas and stimulation, and to enlist assistance. These are when we start to communicate our goals, our measures, our analysis, our strategies, think about all of these different uses. You may not be able to do all of it at once. Be strategic. Which ones do you want to focus on? And then I bring your attention to the last bullet. Because we are asking you as the leaders in the government right now to take risks, to innovate, to try and improve outcomes. Don't just focus on outputs, but focus on improved outcomes. And so what does that mean? That does involve risks. It involves personal risks, and I can tell you how the administration is thinking about this. I cannot guarantee Congress is always thinking this way, but we will work with them to see if we can persuade a few in Congress. What Bill Bratton always said was, nobody got in trouble if the crime rate went up. They got in trouble if they did not know why it had gone up and they didn't have a plan to deal with it. And I think that's the accountability expectation we ought to be establishing all across government. I will say that the SES certification regs, letter, whatever, guidance that went out this year actually incorporates this notion. And I hope all of you will incorporate it too. So let me stop there and take both questions, but also really suggestions. And Michael Messinger is here with me, and grab one of us afterwards if you want to have ideas, thoughts, want to work with us. I really want to work with this group to figure out how we make this work in government. You've been through the wars. You know what it's like. So help us make this work, because I think it's worth doing. Thank you very much. Shut you up, huh? Okay. Any questions? Any thoughts? Well, I'll ask you one.
So I have one.
Yeah.
So I work for the Department of Navy. I don't know if you've been here or not. I work for the Department of Navy, and we're in the next, as well as the rest of the Department of Defense, looking for the cost of savings and efficiencies. One thing that's extremely frustrating, though, is when we report those things, sometimes there are cost avoidances. We've already taken money out of our budget, but we've done great things to help us increase our performance. But when we report them to OMB, they come out on the other end as savings, and we end up losing money in the Congress, which doesn't actually help motivate people to keep looking for that performance improvement. So what can you do with OMB to help stem that tide?
So I'm going to ask you the same question back, because we know that's a problem. Peter Orszag has put out some efforts to sort of allow you to keep some of your administrative savings and use them more flexibly. There's an interesting experiment. It's not far enough along in Australia, going on in Austria right now. That it's a fairly radical kind of experiment. But you guys may have seen efforts that have worked in the past. Where, I asked when I came in, because there's something called gain sharing that Maricopa County has used, where, you know, you basically allow people to the agency and even the people in the agency to share in a percentage of the savings. And so you get a three-way win. It goes, you know, to the people, it goes to the organization, and it goes to beyond the organization. And I was told there's actually a law already, and it's already been scored. Now, I'm not deep into this, so it may be wrong, it may be right, I'm not sure. I didn't, you know. We are looking for ideas that will, in fact, work for you and work for getting both government-wide savings, but also help you be more, you know, smarter and get more motivated to find the savings and get to save and enjoy some of the benefits of those savings. So there is this whole scoring thing, which is, you know, got its own nuances. And when I was at EPA, I wasn't in the bowels of scoring. I'm not in it now, happily, because I'm on the management side. But it does sometimes create some challenges. I want to say, let me ask, does anybody else in this area, in this room, have some ideas to answer that question? Yes. I think that's a great statement. I mean, you know, and it is why we're saying we need to set priorities. We cannot do it all. We've also asked agencies to identify their lower priorities that you might take off the table, as well as saying what are our highest priorities. Plus, starting to say, okay, is there a way we can do this smarter? So one of the beauties of these kinds of, I mean, the first thing I think at these goal-focused data-driven meetings, but even not at the meetings, before you go into the meeting, on the way you manage on a regular basis is really saying, okay, do we know an effective way to move the thing we're trying to move, whether it is healthier kids or it's, you know, cleaner water bodies or cleaner air or, you know, restoring an endangered species. Do we actually know actions that have been effective in influencing those outcomes? If we don't know effective actions, then we need to keep experimenting till we find them. But if we found effective actions, our next set of questions ought to be, okay, is there some way we can do more of that with the same budget? Or even possibly do the same amount with a lesser budget and move some money from here over to here? And I know the frustrations and the demands that come on you on a regular basis. So one of my most frustrating moments at EPA was watching as a study came out that talked about permit backlogs. And so there was a huge push to get rid of the permit backlogs, causing some of the states, one state, to take a whole team of people that were working on hypoxia, which is the lack of oxygen in the Mississippi, and they had one of the major sources, and they had a big effort to reduce hypoxia in their feeder water body. And they had to take those people off that to clear out the permit backlog. Now, if those permits were actually related to a serious environmental problem, great. But if they were outdated, how do we create a system where they don't have to make that and we all feel, oh, okay, this is not a problem, this is actually a smart decision? And I think that's a challenge, and what we have to do is build the capacity to know that. Any other questions? Thank you very, very much, everyone. It was great to talk to you.